Par for the course, it's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The great white whale of Medicare podcasts. He parallel parks like a pro, it's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Well, 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 it's another exciting episode of the Medicare for the Lazy Man. Thank you so much for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. We always appreciate your attendance, and we especially appreciate your good behavior. It's been a long time since we've had to eject anybody from a recording of the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. Our sergeant at arms has, frankly, grown fat and happy because he hasn't had to discipline any of our attendees. So welcome. Welcome to our episode number 50-something or other. We're over 500 episodes. And what we've tried to do in every one of those, 502, episode 5202 that is the one that's being recorded right now. And it is another in a series of episodes that purports to help you figure out how you're going to deal with Medicare when that time arrives. A lot of people are confused, trepidatious, upset. They don't know which direction to go. They don't know what to do when they get close to the Medicare enrollment time. And so what we do is we try to help people feel more confident and feel more knowledgeable about what they're supposed to do when Medicare time approaches for them. And we do that in a couple of ways. One way is by encouraging them to purchase and read my book, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2023. And then within the book, you'll have an email address through which you can contact me, and I will help you on a personal level obtain the insurance that you need to make sure the Medicare program works as well as it possibly can for you. And by well, I mean not only cover you for unexpected medical expenses at the least possible cost and with the greatest possible protection, but also to help you enjoy all of the freedoms that can be enjoyed with the Medicare program. So here's what I would suggest that you do. Go to Medicare for the Lazy Man 2023 at either BarnesandNoble.com or Amazon.com, and then pick out the edition of the book that you think is the best fits your reading style and your budget. And you can actually get these books from a cost of zero if you want to join their little clubs. There's an ebook club, and I think there's an Audible book club that you can join on Amazon, and I think they give you some credit towards the purchase of your first few books. Otherwise, if you're just going to pay retail, the best deal is the Kindle book, and that's about $3.80. And you can have all the Medicare knowledge that anybody would ever want to have for $3.80. Such a deal, ladies and gentlemen. Now, if you want to have a paperback or even the museum quality hardcover book, then those are going to be a little bit more pricey, but they'll last longer too. You know, those electrons can't last forever. Anyway, so by all means, buy the book, read the book, consider contacting me with the information you'll find in the book, and I will be happy to help you finish your enrollment in Medicare and to finish acquiring all the insurance that will protect you for the rest of your life from unexpected medical expenses. I will also protect you from any unexpected contact with Randy Carson. Not that that would be unpleasant, because he's a very pleasant guy, but it's just that I want to keep him hard at work on the Medicare for the Lazy Man staff. Randy, how's the work going today?
Well, in the line of working hard today, a couple of weeks ago, you had provided me with a curated list of questions that people always have on their mind about Medicare.
Oh, I had forgotten about that.
And I am going to ask you one of them. It's they sound, you know, to us, they sound extremely simple, but it always occurs to me that, you know, when I was, closing in on the old Medicare age, I didn't know any of this stuff. So
yeah.
we tend to forget that there's, what, 10,000 a day, you know, round into right. the old Medicare corral.
That's right. And they're most of them are every bit as ignorant as you and I used to be.
Well, and I'm still ignorant to some extent, but if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't know how to spell Medicare. But anyway, let me ask one of these questions.
Okay.
You have, these are very, very informative, and I am going to ask you one, and it'll be an easy one for you because you are the Medicare expert.
All right. Let's see if that's true or not.
Do I need to enroll in Medicare if I work past 65?
Well, that's a trick question. I would like to say no, you don't, but I don't really know anything about the company you're working for or the insurance plan that they're providing for you. So let me say the answer to that question is maybe. Actually, you probably don't need to. Larger companies, and that's 20 employees or more, larger companies will have a health insurance plan that will take the place of Medicare until you're ready to retire. So if you turn 65, you're covered by that larger company's Medicare medical insurance plan, then you most likely will not have to do anything about Medicare until the day you retire, which could be many years in the future. You might keep working because you like your job or you like the revenue from your job. And that means the answer would be no, you don't have to enroll in Medicare. Now, you might be working for a small company, let's say 5 or 10 people, and that changes things because then you would have to talk to the insurance expert or the whoever does the company's personnel paperwork and so forth to ensure that that plan will not take the place of Medicare. So if you work for a small company, the odds are you're going to have to enroll in Medicare Part A and Part B in order that your health insurance plan from the employer will fully cover your expenses if you get sick or have an accident or something. So the answer typically is if you work for a large company, you don't need to do anything about Medicare until you decide to retire. And if you work for a small company, then you probably will have to enroll in Medicare in order to give yourself the best possible protection under their health insurance plan. So was that clear as mud or?
That was a perfect answer. I always learn something every time you answer one of these questions because I don't know, maybe my brain just doesn't work that way. I'm ultimately a software engineer and Medicare just doesn't stick with me for some reason. But that was a great question. And to your credit, I know a lot more about Medicare than I ever did. And I do have... This is an announcement.
Okay.
I have another question like this for our next podcast, but I want everybody to load their guns, write this down because this is going to be an incredible answer that Doug's going to have to give next time. And the question is, let me read it to you verbatim. Is Medicare supplement and Medicare Advantage the same thing?
Oh, that's going to take up most of an episode.
I'm going to give Doug some time to think about that till next time. And you guys think about it till next time because, write it down because that is going to be an episode, ultimately in and of itself, I think.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of yakking going on. So I would say pull up your easy chair, get a drink ready, and maybe your notepad and a crayon so you can take some notes. So that'll be a fun time.
It will be a fun time. So that's my last question for today. And obviously, we're going to turn you right back over to your regularly scheduled programming.
All righty. Well, here we go. Now, not too long ago, I touched on the fact that there is a new weight loss drug, and it's hugely expensive. The name of the drug is Wegovy. And I think it was several episodes ago that I discussed the implications of one of my brand new clients who was taking Wegovy, and it threw their drug plan cost way out the window. No, the thing costs about it's a series of weekly injections that you do at home. And I think the cost per month was something in the neighborhood of $1,500 or thereabouts. And I just read today that there is now an oral version of that drug. I don't know what the pricing is. I could not find that answer. It might be a lot less expensive, but Wegovy is soon to be or is now available in pill form, which I would prefer. If I needed to take it, I would prefer to do that much more than stabbing myself with a needle every week for injections at home and paying $1,500 a month for the privilege of doing that. But anyway, this led me to some articles about how expensive new drugs are not only sought after to save us from horrible medical conditions that we all want to avoid if we can, but also how they throw the finances of the Medicare system into some question. One of them is the Alzheimer's drug, Aduhelm. A few years ago, this drug came out and it was purported to be very helpful for people that were suffering from Alzheimer's. It was theoretically going to arrest the progression of the disease and perhaps maybe reverse it, but at least stop the progress. And so the problem was that drug was so expensive that for the following year, the CMS, that's the group of people that sit around playing solitaire at the federal government, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, they forgot to add the second M. So instead of doing CMMS as their acronym, it's only CMS, and it's confusing to me, let me tell you. But they don't seem to want to fix it. So they sit around and they said, because of this new expensive drug, we're going to tack a huge amount of money onto the premium due for next year's Medicare Part B. And we're going to make everybody suffer because we expect that we're going to have to be passing out this expensive drug to all the people that get Alzheimer's. And it turned out Aduhelm was not very effective. And so we had 1 year where the changes in costs were then pretty small in order to overcome the overreaction that CMS did. So they stuck it to us 1 year and then made the increases much more moderate for the year after that. In fact, the premium for Part B, as in boy, went down, as I recall. And that's the first time I had seen that during my Medicare career. So now I've got an article here that says new Alzheimer's drugs spark hope for patients, but cost concerns for Medicare. So maybe this will explain the situation better than I've been able to off the top of my head. The FDA's accelerated approval of Aduhelm in June of 2021 ended a 20-year dry spell in new treatments for Alzheimer's disease after decades of clinical research. Now, just 2 years later, the FDA is soon to announce whether it will grant full approval to another anti-amyloid monoclonal antibody treatment. Let's throw a few more syllables in there, shall we? The name of this is Leqembi, L-E-Q-E-M-B-I. And there's another word that's L-E-C-A-N-E-M-A-B, lecanemab. Anyway, they're going to think about approving this after granting, or they have granted accelerated approval this past January. Clinical trial results show that this Leqembi, made by Eisai, E-I-S-A-I, and Biogen. Oh, I know Biogen. Anyway, it made by that company slowed the rate of cognitive decline and reduced amyloid plaques, the protein that accumulates in the brains of people with Alzheimer's disease, although not without the risk of adverse events. FDA approval of a similar drug showing similar clinical benefit may not be far behind. So that's made by Lilly. And so we might have two Alzheimer drugs coming our way. If the FDA grants full approval to Leqembi, Medicare is expected to cover it for all indicated populations. These are patients with mild cognitive impairment or mild dementia, with confirmed amyloid plaques. I don't know how they confirm the plaques until they cut your skull open. The historic wisdom or the advice that people would give you is that nobody could really diagnose whether you had Alzheimer's disease or not until you were dead and they could do an autopsy. So if there's plaque in the brain, I don't think they can discern that or prove that until you have gone to your greater reward. So let's see, Medicare is going to pay for this drug for people with cognitive impairment or mild dementia with confirmed amyloid plaques, substantially broadening access to this medication beyond current limits under Medicare's coverage with evidence development. The prospect of Medicare broadly covering a treatment that could slow the progression of cognitive decline in patients with Alzheimer's disease offers long-awaited hope for these patients and their families. But it also raises concerns about the potential impact on Medicare spending. The exact number of Medicare beneficiaries who meet the prescribing requirements for this drug is unknown, and the take-up rate among the eligible individuals for a drug like this one is difficult to estimate. But for illustrative purposes, if 5% of the people of the older adults with Alzheimer's disease take this drug, at the annual list price of $26,000, $26,500 is the list price for annual dosage of that drug. This would add $8.9 billion to Medicare Part B spending annually, assuming that all are enrolled in Part B, which would be a fairly safe assumption, I think. A 10% take-up rate would amount to $17.8 billion in higher spending. To put these amounts in context, projected Medicare spending on this drug would be roughly equal to spending on the top three Part B as in boy drugs combined in 2021, based on the 5% take-up rate. That means 5% of the people who are eligible to use the drug actually use it. At the 10% take-up rate, projected spending on this one drug alone would exceed spending on the top 10 Part B drugs in 2021 and would represent close to half of the $40 billion spent in total on the 600-plus Part B-covered drugs in 2021. And these estimates do not include additional costs to Medicare associated with PET scans or multiple MRIs that may be needed in conjunction with the use of the drug, nor potential offsets if treatment with the drug helps reduce spending on other services, such as hospitalizations due to falls or skilled nursing facility stays. Higher Medicare Part B spending would likely lead to higher Medicare Part B premiums, which are set to cover roughly 25% of the program costs. In the case of Aduhelm, that's that drug that was approved a couple of years ago, the anticipation of substantially higher Medicare Part B spending due to coverage of that drug contributed to a 15% jump in the Part B premium between 2021 and 2022. That was an increase that was substantially above the norm. Medicare's subsequent decision to limit coverage of Aduhelm contributed to a modest decline in the Part B premium for 2023. So that's what I was referring to at the beginning of this story. They overreacted in their increase between 2021 and 2022, and then they withdrew some of that increase between 2022 and 2023. So at the drug's current $26,500 list price, Medicare patients administered the drug would be responsible for more than $5,000 out-of-pocket each year based on a 20% coinsurance requirement in traditional Medicare. Medicare Advantage enrollees are also typically responsible for 20% coinsurance for the drugs covered under their plans, up to their plan's out-of-pocket maximum. In 2022, the weighted average of out-of-pocket maximums in the Medicare Advantage plans was nearly $5,000 for in-network services and just over $9,200 for in-network and out-of-network services. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you were unfortunate enough to have been tricked into getting a Medicare Advantage plan, your out-of-pocket expenses are going to be much higher than your out-of-pocket risk with a Medicare supplement plan, and especially the high-value Medicare supplement plan that Randy and I have been touting for so long. But I return to the story. Beneficiaries may pay less if they have supplemental insurance, such as Medigap or Medicaid, that covers Medicare cost sharing. The Inflation Reduction Act includes a new cap on all out-of-pocket drug spending under the Medicare Part D program beginning in 2024 that will provide significant financial relief to people who take high-priced Part D drugs. But there is no similar cap on out-of-pocket drug spending under Medicare Part B, as in boy. I don't really know why all these drugs are falling under Part B, but the fact that they are is good news for the people, bad news for Medicare. If they're hugely expensive, then the Medicare enrollees are going to pay less because they'll have Part B to cover 80% of the drugs after the Part B deductible, and then they will have a Medicare supplement, if they listen to my advice, that will take up the rest of their cost of those drugs. I just don't understand why they're covered under Part B as in boy rather than Part D, but I guess we'll have to wait and see why that is. So finally, the curator highlighted a paragraph towards the bottom of this article. While broader access to this drug could provide a modest clinical benefit to older adults with mild cognitive impairment and mild dementia, a significant increase in Medicare spending and premiums is a distinct possibility and one that Medicare patients and taxpayers are likely to confront in the not too distant future. So that is an unpleasant thought. We get a great drug that may be helpful for people otherwise that are going to be devastated by Alzheimer's disease, and then it turns out to be a budget buster for Medicare. I've got one shorter article here. I know that our clock is ticking louder and louder, but this says, just released, what is the potential impact of new drugs for obesity and Alzheimer's disease on Medicare costs, coverage, and beneficiaries? Two new analyses examine the potential impact of Medicare coverage for new prescription drugs for obesity and Alzheimer's on program spending and beneficiary out-of-pocket costs, as well as the role that Inflation Reduction Act could play in mitigating these effects. Manufacturers of both types of drugs are lobbying for broad Medicare coverage of them, though they face different challenges. The availability of weight loss drugs, including Ozempic and Wegovy, and Eli Lilly's Mounjaro, has the potential to be transformative for people who struggle with obesity and obesity-related medical conditions. But as the first analysis explains, these drugs, which are expensive, are not covered by Medicare because current law prohibits Medicare from covering drugs prescribed for weight loss. Congress would need to amend the law for weight loss drugs to be covered under Medicare, although coverage could also be potentially achieved administratively through a demonstration waiver at or a CMS innovation model. In the fight against Alzheimer's, the FDA will soon announce whether it will grant full approval to Leqembi, that drug we were talking about in the prior article, after granting accelerated approval in January. Our second analysis explains that if that happens, Medicare is expected to cover that drug for all indicated populations. Medicare coverage of a drug that could slow the progression of cognitive decline offers hope for Alzheimer's patients and their families, but it also raises concerns about the potential impact on Medicare spending. And so it goes on and on and on. Let me skip to the end of the article. If covered by Medicare, these drugs could be among the limited number of drugs that would be subject to Medicare's new drug price regulation negotiation authority under the Inflation Reduction Act. They keep talking about that. I'll tell you right now that Inflation Reduction Act doesn't reduce inflation at all. But anyway, not for several years. Apparently, their negotiations will not start for a while. But for example, manufacturers of a biologic drug product like this, the one we're talking about, Leqembi, would be exempt from having Medicare negotiated prices take effect for 13 years from the drug's licensure date, which for that particular drug would be no sooner than 2036. For any one of the small molecule drugs being used for weight loss, negotiated prices could potentially take effect in 2027. Another provision of the law will cap out-of-pocket Part D spending at $2,000 in 2025. The cap would make weight loss drugs more affordable if they are covered under Part D, but the law's new cap does not limit out-of-pocket spending for drugs that are covered under Medicare Part B as in boy, as would be the case with this Leqembi. Once again, I don't know how they make the decision between a Part D as in dog drug and a Part B as in boy drug, but that obviously has an important effect on the out-of-pocket costs that the Medicare participant is going to have to pay. So, Randy, I think that's enough about these expensive drugs for today. Let's just hope that we hear that they are effective, because paying for them is one thing, but actually having them work has been a harder goal to achieve.
Absolutely. Well, I have one. Obviously, I have one thing that I've written down. I'm going to do some research on, because I, as you, caught some interesting information in that one article. I don't think you can discover the presence of amyloid plaques without an autopsy.
Right. So, I don't think that's true. I mean, I believe that's true.
So I don't think that's going to be something they're going to use to see if they want to prescribe. What was it called again?
Leqembi, L-E-Q-E-M-B-I, I think.
Mrs. Smith, we have some good news and we have some bad news.
Right.
Yeah. Your husband qualifies for Leqembi. Unfortunately, we had to remove his brain to determine that.
My mother-in-law had Alzheimer's, but they weren't really sure. And back in the research stages, and I'm thinking in the late 1990s, so this is maybe 1995-ish or thereabouts, she had been almost comatose for 10 years. And when she finally died, the family had been approached by the Alzheimer's disease, Alzheimer's Association of America, I guess it was, and they were asked to sign documents basically giving her body to science so that they could open her skull and see if she had actual Alzheimer's. That was the only way they could determine it, other than watching her behavior, which gradually, you know, was a downhill slide for that poor lady. And that was the only way they could confirm that she actually did have Alzheimer's. And it was, the family went along with that process and gave her body over to the medical researchers because they wanted to know whether there was a, you know, that's one step in the direction of finding out whether there's a genetic predisposition. Mm-hmm. And so I can now hold that over my wife's head every time she does something I don't like. I can point fingers and say, hey, you know, remember your mother.
There you go.
Maybe not the husband of the year award behavior, but at least it's a lighthearted way of addressing what was a tragic situation at the time.
Absolutely. I don't wish that on my worst enemy. But anyway, having said that, we need to close up shop. Our 75-cent clock is done. But there's a few things I want to touch on before we leave. I want you to write Doug at dbj@mlmmailbag.com and ask him any questions that may have popped into your head during the podcast. You can actually check us out at medicareforthelazyman.com. He talked about all the various ways that you can get access to his book and in what form, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2023. And if you can find a way to give us a rating on the podcast and the book, that would be really, really appreciated, because we're always up against it. Ratings, they just never stop. The rating wars go on forever. But thank you for joining us. You have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance insurance guy, originally from Oklahoma, somewhere close to Muskogee, maybe not.
Learn your Oklahoma geography.
That's right. That's right. But not now. He's living in the high altitudes in the mountains behind Cave Creek, Arizona. He has to make quite a climb to the house, and I usually put him in, well, today anyway, I'm going to put him in at about 9,300 feet.
Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. We'll look forward to talking to you next time. Bye-bye.